third session today. Our first speaker this afternoon is Andrea Schneider from Red Hat and obviously from Zumba as well, Zumba team as well. And he will be talking about PCE, RPC, and Endpoint Mapper.
Yeah, hello. I hope you're all awake after lunch and can follow. My name is Andreas Schneider. I'm a Zumba team member. I'm working for Red Hat, and I'm working there on Zumba and free IPA. And the last months, I worked on DCE RPC, improving our infrastructure, and writing an endpoint mapper for Zumba 3. And this talk will be about this stuff. So I will give you a short introduction in DCE RPC, how it works. Then I will tell you what endpoint mapper is, and more or less how endpoint mapper works. Then I will give you some details what we changed in a Zumba 3 RPC server to make use of this stuff, what we improved there, what we will do to improve it in the next weeks and months, and why we did all this stuff. Okay, so let's start with DCE RPC. First, some TLAs, what's its meaning. So the important stuff I will talk about is RPC means remote procedure call. Then you will hear something about NDR, which means network data representation. And I will, and then there is an interface description language, which I will explain a little bit later. So let's first look at the DCE RPC process. This process has more or less two models. One is that you have a client-server model, and the other model is that you have an application, stub, and runtime library model. So normally, in the documentation, you read about three of them. There is a fourth one, which is transport. But if the client and the server process is on the same machine, you can take a shortcut here and directly call into the server code. So let's look into the details of these levels you have here. So on the client, we go through the client side and then talk about the server side. So the first layer is the application layer. You have, for example, a printing application and you want to display some printers, or maybe you have a registry editor and want to display all the values of a key. So the application implements functionality you want to display, for example, here, like the values. And this application calls a function from the client stub. For the application, it looks like that it's calling a local function, and it doesn't see that all the network, what's going on the network. So the application, like here, for example, spool, if you go to printing and you want to list all the printers, you call a function called DCE RPC spool as enum printers. Or if you want to display registry keys and or the values of registry key, you call just this function. These functions are here in the client stub. And to describe these functions or how these functions are auto-generated, there is a language which is called interface description language. You define more or less the structures and the function prototypes in there. Then we have a compiler, which is called PIDL. This auto-generates C codes and all the functions which are in the client stub. What these functions are doing is just getting the information from the application, and then this information is marshaled into the network data presentation, that it can be sent over the wire. So this part is auto-generated code, and this allows us to write just with this IDL language, we just write a little bit of code and generate thousands and thousands of lines and generate client stubs and server stubs out of it. These auto-generated code calls then into the runtime library. This is our DCE RPC library, libRPC, and this RPC library normally here, if you're on the client side, it establishes the connection over a transport into the server and authenticates the user. There is also an anonymous connection, then you don't have any authentication, or you have authentication and want to authenticate the user, then this will handle it over the transport. This transport is can be, you can talk to the RPC server from the client over several transports. The most, or the well-known in the Samba world, is that you have SMB named pipes. There is a second one, which is more and more used. That's the TCP connection. Then we also have local RPC. I don't know exactly how it is implemented in the Windows world, but in Samba we use Unix sockets for this. Then there are, in the specification, you find a lot of more transports, but normally you don't find these in the Windows world, so mostly the name pipes and TCP/IP is used. So now the client wants to display printers. It calls a function, an auto-generated function here. This function marshals the arguments it gave it into the network data representation. The library here, it creates over the transport an RPC bind. Here the RPC library connects it, finds out what it is, calls into the server stub. So this part here accepts the connection, checks for the authentication if it is correct, and then looks which functions I need to call into server stub to unmarshal the network data representation, and and when this is done, it knows, for example, okay, this user, I got a packet, this user wants to enumerate the printers on the server side, so it wants to display which printers are available, so it calls this server stub calls into the application code again. This application code on the server side is the actual implementation, how to read, so you read the printers like we do it over cups, for example, to display them, and then the application code, which is here, the spool.ss enum printers, fills out the result, which printers you are, and then it goes directly back over the transport and goes back these levels up to the application, and the application displays the printers or shows you the values of the key you want to enumerate in the registry editor, for example. What we do in Samba is we use a lot of the DCE RPC code internally. The reason is that this is a stable interface and it makes sense to use it. So what you can do here is create a shortcut that this goes down in the RPC library, and so the client and the server process are on the same machine, and you have more or less a shortcut here, so you don't have to establish a transport. You have a fake transport which in the RPC library, so this is more or less, this is called directly to the server stub and goes back to the application. It It has one disadvantage. I think we haven't implemented yet. So the arguments you give to the function are marshaled into the network data representation, then and directly are unmarshaled again. So this needs some time we spend or waste there, and this could be improved. But the question is if we really want to do that, or if it is, or if we just can spend this time and get some extra checks we might want to have. Okay. Let's look at endpoint mapper and what endpoint mapper is. Some TLAs again. So EPM is shortcut for endpoint mapper. I will also use UUID, Universal Unique Identifier, which is a hash which identifies interfaces in the RPC stuff, and NDR again. So what is endpoint mapper? I think some of you know that there is a port mapper on the Unix world, and endpoint mapper is nothing else than a simple port mapper with some extras. If you don't know what a port mapper is, think about it that it's like a DNS server, but for ports. So you have more or less, like in DNS, you have a host name and you want an IP address, and here it's you have some ID and you want to talk to you know the ID of a service you want to talk to, and you just send this ID and it will tell you on which port you connect where the RPC service is running. So you have to differentiate between an endpoint and an interface. An endpoint could be a port or a pipe, a named pipe, and it's possible that one endpoint provides several interfaces, and an interface is normally an RPC service which is running on this endpoint. An example is the named pipe netlog on, and over this named pipe / pipe netlog on, you can do a netlog on connection, but you can also do a LSA RPC connection. That's why you can't use the already existing port mapper. It needs to be extended a little bit, so that's why it's called endpoint mapper. So you remember this process. You have an application like you want to show which printers are available on the server. So you are going down this way, and you are here and want to connect to the server, and now the question is for example, where do I have to connect on the server to be able to talk to the print server? To find this out, you have the endpoint mapper. So when you start up an RPC service, normally it sets up an endpoint like a TCP/IP port or a named pipe. And this is done dynamically on startup. So, for example, if we start out SMBD with RPC services at the moment, then, for example, the WinRex server allocates or listens on a port which is 1027, and this information is sent to the endpoint mapper. We tell the endpoint mapper, hello, if you want to talk to WinRec, then the client who wants to connect to WinRec needs to connect to port 1027. And what you are doing is you are in this process. If you want to connect to the WinRec server here, first what you are doing is that you do an endpoint mapper call and talk to the endpoint mapper and ask it, hey, I want to talk to WinRec, where do I have to connect you? Because Endpoint Mapper has a fixed port, and this port is 135. There is a name pipe which is called EP Mapper you can connect to. So the RPC services are started and get assigned a dynamic port, but Endpoint Mapper has a fixed port. So you connect to the fixed port of Endpoint Mapper and ask Endpoint Mapper on which port is WinRec or the remote registry running, and so how do I connect to that? And it will tell you on which port you have to connect. So the Endpoint Mapper RPC servers, the Endpoint Mapper RPC service provides several functions. Here are a list of the most important functions. The first is EPM insert to add a new endpoint. So when you start an RPC service, you call this function to register the RPC service at the Endpoint Mapper. You can also delete it again. Then there is a lookup function where you can display all the entries which are available in the Endpoint Mapper. Then there is a map function. It's really nice. So the official documentation about EPM map states applies some algorithm to provide an endpoint map to produce a list of protocol towers. Though I wondered, okay, what do they mean? What is some algorithm? They don't explain what some algorithm is, so you have to dig into some code to find out what the algorithm is. But normally it's simple. You provide a unique ID to the endpoint mapper, and it will tell you, okay, you want to connect to this service, and it will tell you which endpoints you can connect to, or if you ask just for one special endpoint, like a port, then it will tell you on which port it is running. And then there, for lookup and EPM map, if you get a lot of information, then there is a function to free a handle to release memory on the server side, or do more or less a disconnect. So let's take a look at a Wireshark trace. So this is a Windows 7 client connecting to a Windows 2008 server. And nowadays, it looks like that Microsoft more and more wants to use only TCP IP, so they heavily use EPM map. Or the first thing they do, they try to connect to the endpoint mapper, and if this is not available, they connect over SMB and try it over NAM pipes. So if you look here at the network trace, then you see that the Windows 7 client is here connecting and establishing an RPC bind. So it's connecting, the client connects to the server. The bind is acknowledged, so there is no authentication. It's an anonymous connection. And then you see that it is doing a map request. So it calls the function EPM map we saw here. And if we look at this call or at this packet it sends, then you can see here that it is calling the map function. And if you look at this function, it has a tower pointer. And in this tower pointer, you can see that this has several floors. And this gives you the information. This is more or less, you request information from the endpoint mapper, and that's how the call looks. So here we say it want to connect to DRS UAPI. That's the first floor. If we look at the explanation of this floor, floor one provides an RPC interface identifier. So that's the ID of the RPC service we want to connect. The next floor is the transfer syntax. We only support NDR at the moment, and normally in the Windows world, it's only NDR. There are others, but you don't have to care about. It's always NDR, but nowadays you see sometimes NDR64. In FLOS 3, you have the identifier if you want TCP/IP or named pipes. And depending on 4.3, you know how many floors will be following. So for floor is normally a port address. For 5 is the transport, like an IP address or a netbus name. And floor 6 is routing. If you are doing TCP/IP, then you only have 5 floors. There is no routing information about it. If you look here at the second floor, you can see that it is network data representation protocol. Floor 4.3 says we want an RPC connection, and this value states that we want TCP/IP. For floor is a port number, which is one. This is a request. So there is no information in there on which port you have to connect or on which IP address. So that's simply default values you put in. If you now look at the map response, then you can see that the server tells you that this service DRSUIPA is running on port 49,157. And tells you the IP address you have to connect. If you look now in the network trace a little bit down, you can see that it is establishing another RPC bind now to the DRSUIPA RPC interface and binds it. And if you look further, then you can see that there is another map request. This time, it wants to connect to talk to NetLogon. There is a response. It tells it on which port it is running. So the port before was 47,157. This is now 49,000. And if you look down now, then you can see that it is again creating a bind request, acknowledges it, and sends a NetLogon get domain info request. So whenever Windows at the moment is connecting to an or wants to connect to an RPC server, it first does a map request to find out the port of the service which it wants to connect to, and then it normally, if it gets a response, then it connects over TCP/IP. If this fails, then normally it falls back to named pipes. So that's an endpoint tower with floors. The maximum is 6 floors, but normally, as you can see, the normal is to find out the port on a TCP/IP, so that's maximum number is 5 floors. So to get all this stuff working in Zamba 3, we needed to extend the RPC server, create new functions, and new functionality. Before we started to work on this, you could only talk to the RPC services over named pipes. There was no possibility to talk over TCP/IP. The reason for this was we didn't have any endpoint mapper. And without endpoint mapper, you don't know on which ports are the RPC services running. So what we did, we added the support for TCP/IP and local pipes. The reason for the local pipes is that you can have internal communication between Zamba daemons, for example. And yeah, the TCP/IP was the most significant, and the local RPC over Unix sockets is more or less the same as TCP/IP, but you just open a Unix socket. These local RPC pipe is used to that you are able to register services at the endpoint mapper daemon. And you can also, as an external daemon, so you're not part of Samba, but you are, have your own software, like here, for example, OpenChange would be able to register their exchange server over the local RPC pipe, over Unix socket, and tell, hello, we are here, we are listening on TCP/IP2. So we also were thinking about making the whole process more robust. Like if you are having a daemon running and the endpoint mapper daemon and it crashes and it, you start it up again, then the endpoint mapper database is completely empty. So all services have to re-register. So you want that if it crashes, the services re-register. If you want that you are able to restart it and the RPC services re-register at it. And you also want that if an RPC service dies, then you will automatically delete it from the endpoint mapper entry list. Because if it isn't available, it doesn't make sense to tell any client that on which port it can connect if there is no service behind it. So on the client side, the RPC services try to register several times at the moment. So we have a loop and say, so we first try to register. If this does fail, then we wait for a certain amount of time and try it again. If we successfully register at the endpoint mapper, then what we do is we leave the connection open and go into a monitoring loop. This means we do an EPM map command on its own servers again and again. And as soon if there is no response, then we simply go back to the other loop, to the registration loop. So if endpoint mapper is restarted, all the RPC services automatically register their ports after some time. So it depends on how the timeout is of the monitor loop or the time between the monitor connection is done. On the server side, we do the same. So we more or less monitor the client connection. We get recognized as soon as this connection dies. And if this connection dies, the special connection, then we have a callback which simply calls into the endpoint mapper and automatically deletes this RPC service. If something is going wrong now that the endpoint mapper accidentally deletes this endpoint, that's normally no problem because the connection is established again and we re-register automatically again. So this is some robustness we have implemented that should make it more safe to use. Currently, we are looking in scalability. A problem in the Samba 3 RPC server at the moment is that now we started to listen on a lot of ports, and we listen on these ports at the moment in the main SMBD process. So this is in the parent process. And if someone connects there, then only one process handles all this connection. So this doesn't scale. Some weeks ago, I started together with Simo to do some research on a pre-forked model. And we decided to implement a mutex locking-based pre-fork model, which Simo did the last 3 weeks, which is already working pretty well. So this prefer model is pretty simple. So the parent binds all the sockets and then it forks a number of children. So the parent is pretty small. All the parent does is looking after the children. Do I have to fork more children? Do I have to kill children? And it more or less does nothing else. The childs have simply a lock around the accept call. call. So all childs listen on all the sockets we created and bound to. And a child normally is able to accept the connection. And if this is done, then it releases the lock, and the next child can accept the connection. Simo created or started to implement this, and at the moment we have a prototype. We have a spool-SS daemon, which already does pre-forking and works pretty well. The next step is to extend it to other RPC services and create daemons for other RPC services. So at the moment it's really just prototyping and experimenting with it, but the plan is in future to have this in complete Samba. But before we can do that, we need to do a lot of cleanup in the Samba 3 source code. I think we are currently in a pretty good state, and it's pretty simple to try it out. So at the moment it's not upstream, it's in Simo's branch, but everything can be configured with simple options in the smb.conf file. And if you just can enable endpoint mapper there, you can enable spool-SS daemon. And the plan is that you can, in a few weeks, enable it in the SMBD process and test it and give us feedback. If it doesn't work, you simply turn it off again. So the question is, why did we all this stuff? And there are two reasons for this. One is the Frankie approach you might have heard of. Though there will be a talk from Volker later about Samba 3 and Samba 4 combined setup. This has the nickname Frankie. A lot of infrastructure we used there or extended was implemented by Volker for this approach a while ago. So we extended it to make use of it, and it's still working, and it's working great. What's the benefit of endpoint map in the Frankie approach is that we can simply use the Samba 4 endpoint mapper and run Samba 3 RPC services and register there. So you can simply have Samba 4 disable some of the RPC services in Samba 4, but as Samba 3 RPC services are registering at the endpoint mapper, you can still connect to this RPC service, but you use the one version in the Samba 3 daemon. And we hope that we can improve this stuff, that this will work in future more perfectly or fits more perfect into this combined setup, because we think that's the right approach to do. So I suggest to listen to Volker, his talk, which will go more into details of Frankie, but that's what also will help this approach to improve and make more of the services of Samba 3 available in Samba 4, which are there not implemented yet, like spool-SS stuff and others. Sorry?
I don't have slides, I will just walk through code.
Ah, okay. Yeah, but that's fine. I mean, the code is more or less a lot of code we use for the spool-SS daemon, and the same code is used to create the Frankie approach. So this is will be soon more tested, especially because we use it inside of Samba 3 make use of it. The other why is I'm working for Red Hat in the Samba and Free IPA team. So there is a product which is called Free IPA. It is something like Active Directory. It's not the same, but think of it, it's Active Directory, but just for Linux only. Yeah? So Free IPA combines LDAP, Kerberos, DNS, all this stuff, like Active Directory does, which is already available on Linux, but this combines it in one product, which is called Free IPA. What we want to do in Free IPA is that we want to establish cross-forest trust between Active Directory, between an Active Directory domain and a free IPA domain. That we are able to do this, we need some infrastructure from SAMBA 3. So we looked at SAMBA 4 and SAMBA 3, but it made more sense to use SAMBA 3. So we decided to use SAMBA 3 and implemented it, or did all this implementation to be able to use some of the RPC services of SAMBA 3 for this approach. And we want mainly to do a TCP/IP connection and not name pipe, so that's why we need an endpoint mapper and put all this effort in it to get it created. And yeah, so we will benefit from it, and all others will benefit from it because Windows is forcing more and more TCP/IP. For this approach, yeah, we need LSA and NetLogon, maybe SAMR, so we need more or less a daemon which provides this functionality of these RPC services, and that's what we will work on and provide. There is also already some work being done or has been submitted upstream. There is a PDP IPA backend at the moment, and one of my colleagues, Sumit Bose, he implemented a simple tool which is called NetRPC Trust. So with this tool, you can create a forest trust between two domains. You have two domain controllers, and you are sitting somewhere. And with this tool, you can join or create between these two domain controllers and a forest trust remotely. So that's already upstream, and you can use it. Which is a useful tool. PDB IPA is already there. It's a PestDB module, and more stuff will come. So we are working to get this done, I think, or everything done in a few months. Depends on how fast we move forward with the pre-fork stuff, which is currently our main focus. And So, there is some time left, so if you have questions, then please ask now. The slides are available on this domain. There is also information on this domain, how to contact me, where you can find me on IRC. So if I can't answer the question now, then please send me an email. The details can be found here. So, any questions? Yeah.
I'm just interested to know, do you do both authenticated and unauthenticated queries?
Sorry?
Can you do both authenticated and unauthenticated queries to the endpoint mapper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally it's only an unauthenticated, or there is more...
Windows does do authenticate, that's why I was asking actually, and it's a little bit quirky, so I was just kind of waving a flag at you to say you should pay attention a little bit to that.
Yeah, both should be possible, but normally it's an unauthenticated...
There are increasingly authenticated ones in there.
Yeah. And Windows doesn't provide the EPM insert and delete functions, so we have them implemented, but they are only available over local RPC.
Yeah. I would just make the point as well, I don't know how much you've looked at RPCL, but Microsoft, we had a bunch of extensions as well, but they're deprecated now, so...
Yeah.
Whether you're interested in implementing deprecated functions.
No. So these are the functions, the most important functions, which are used by Microsoft and,
Andre, is there a convenience API to make the call?
I'll give you... So the question was, is there a convenience API that makes it really easy for me?
There is, you think about a library or something like that? No, there is not. But we plan.
Sad place.
Sorry?
This is the sad place.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you talk DC RPC and have the IDL, then you can write your client and do it. But else, I think it would make sense to provide a library that you can use and register. with it. Looks like you are interested to implement it in OpenChange. No?
Would you like...
This is a bit of a problem for us because currently we call into some very convenient but not actual API to register endpoints.
So you do this already in you already register in Xamarin 4?
Yeah.
Okay, and you do this over some tricky ways?
There's public libraries and no public headers.
Okay.
Yeah. It's gross hack, but this you have to register, right? Otherwise, you have no endpoint.
Yeah, yeah. The plan is to implement some kind of this, but at the moment it's not really ready because we need the prefog model to that it scales, and if this starts, everything starts to working, then we will implement a library, probably, which allows to do this. Yeah, I brought some snacks, some samba snacks for questions. So we had already two people. I have more, so if questions ask now and get some samba. Any more questions?
Well, if not, you can still contact him, of course, just as he said. Yeah. Thank you, Andreas.
So I would put the rest of Samba here. So here, everyone can grab his free version of Samba.
Even without asking a question. Okay, we have 3 minutes time, and our next speakers I call on Holger Hetterich and Benjamin Brunner.